Blimey. This is one out of a jam jar you got here.
House of Mystery contains demons, angels, elementals, magicians, wizards, apparitions, adult language, and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not enter the House of Mystery.
All right, then. On with the show.
Hello, welcome to the House of Mystery, the John Constantine and Friends podcast. This is Rayman Digital's first official Constantine fan show. In this show, we get into a wide array of discussions centered around the Rogue Mage and his delicious friends. Yeah.
I don't know if you would call them delicious.
Well, Zatanna is. Please.
Okay, Zatanna is.
I would make her my wife in an instant. Even if they said, Michael, you will lose your dick. I'm like, well.
Goodbye, dick.
Wow. Goodbye. If I was dead man, I'd be like, all right, I'll just possess a dude with a big ding-a-ling.
Where's the closest black man?
Come here, Zatanna. Where's the closest black man? Oh, my God. All right. So today we have a discussion centered around dead man. So I know there may be people that say, Dave, Mike, I thought this is a Constantine show. And it is predominantly, but it's Constantine and Friends.
Yes, because Constantine does have a very, very vast universe around him.
Yes, I have lots of other stories planned. Centered around Constantine, but also his friends and villains as well. And let's put friends with some air quotes there, because that's, you know, friends.
It's Constantine's type of friends.
Right. So it's probably going to be like a 70-30 split, I think. 70% Constantine, 30% villains and friends of Constantine.
That works.
But today we are going to discuss Dead Man, specifically his origins and the first several issues of his story that took place within the pages of Strange Adventures, starting with Strange Adventures number 205 that premiered or dropped on this world, I want to say October 1967. Dave, I love them. Are they schlocky? Absolutely.
Yes.
Are they cheesy? Absolutely. But there's just a certain level of charm that comes with comic book reads from the 60s, especially when you're dealing with content like this. And I know some people may say, well, there's so many other Dead Man stories you could have got into. But I feel like we needed to start at the beginning with Dead Man, Dave, because even though Dead Man is one of the more, and this may make people throw things at their wall or throw their headphones across the room, Dave, but I feel like Dead Man, it might be the biggest name outside of Swamp Thing, within the Justice League Dark circles, only because Dead Man has been connected to some very big storylines. Maybe he's not a household name like, say, Swamp Thing, but I think more people even know Dead Man, even say more than Zatanna.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because Dead Man's been around since the Silver Age of comics.
Yeah,
he's been, you know, in the 1970s, 60s and 70s, I think.
And dude, he's been a big, not just a guest spot like, hey, I'm here. He's been a part of some really big storylines.
Yes.
Canon defining storylines, which has been fantastic for Dead Man, and has brought his name back into the limelight, because he is a character that's been around since the 60s, but he's been forgotten, been brought back out, and he has struggled with his own titles, but he seems to have found a groove within other people's stories.
Yeah, because it's really one of the reasons why I think that is because, especially when we dive into Dead Man himself, it's really difficult for comic book writers to write a story around a concept of a character with his type of power set.
Yeah.
Because his power set can be very OP.
Yes. And it's very strange and sometimes unsettling, some of the things he does and says to people. Oh, I'm in you right now. I'm like, oh, wow, dead man.
or the fact that he can you know, mind rape you, essentially. Yeah. Like he literally goes into a person's body, knows every single memory of that person. And then he basically goes, oh, okay, so that's what you did last Sunday.
Yes, it's very intrusive. Wow. It's very intrusive. I remember his introduction into Justice League Dark in 2001. That first few issues, there were some complaints back in 2001 with how off-putting his character was. If you remember, he was like in a relationship with what was that woman he was in a relationship with? I forget now. It's been a very long time since I read those, but he alluded to the fact that, oh, he took over a man's body so he can have sex with his girlfriend for the first time in a long time. And I remember people were like, that is not right. Like, that is just not right. So it is sometimes disconcerting, but it's also, I think, a little tongue-in-cheek.
It's a tongue-in-cheek.
It's done purposely. There's a little bit of a dark, like, humor to it, a wink wink, like, this, don't take this serious, but let's be honest, this is what all of you would think or do if you had this ability.
Oh yeah,
like, oh
yeah.
Wow, look at that dude, he has a really hot wife.
Here we go.
Well, she doesn't know.
She doesn't whoop. All right, baby, let's get this on.
Oh wow, you're so much better tonight. Well,
I only got some time left.
Yeah,
but like, one of my favorite moments of Deadman that shows he has that macabre, morbid type of humor,
yes,
is when he's teamed up with Batman. Because whenever he dives into Batman or even Robin, one of my favorite moments in Blackest Night was when he dived into Robin and goes, oh, that's why you're so fucked up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's very intrusive. And
it's very intrusive.
Yeah. So that's why he's an interesting character, in my opinion, because there's so many things they can do with that. The psychology of Boston Brand, which, if there may be people that don't even know who Deadman is, and we're going to get into all that. Deadman's real name is Boston Brand before he died. So these stories that we're going to get into today, Dave, these stories have been collected into collected editions, various collected editions throughout the years. Deadman Book 1 is the one we're going to get into. Specifically 176 pages, and it collects Strange Adventures number 205 through 213, and it has now been coined as Volume 1 of Dead Man's Origins, Dead Man's Story. And good luck finding a physical copy. They are not currently in print. You can find a few overpriced versions on eBay. The cheapest physical copy I've seen was going for about $44 on Amazon. Digital is probably the best way to go if you're looking to just learn more about the hero. Comixology, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. If you have a DC Universe subscription, you can actually read issues 205 through 210 for free. Okay, so you're not going to get the complete story of Volume 1. Suspiciously, issues 211 through 213 are missing almost everywhere. And I had to find them through more creative means, Dave, and you guys can read between the lines. I had to pirate them.
Welcome to my world.
And it could be licensing reasons. Let's think not so cynically here. Or it could be DC Universe just didn't want those final three issues, because things go real sideways very fast. They go very political, and let's just say their politics is interesting.
Yes.
Not offensive, just very dated. The story takes Deadman, a.k.a. Boston Brand, to Mexico. And Arnold Drake and Neil Adams' depiction of Mexico is a bit over the top. But apparently, in their minds, Dave, Mexico has not moved on since 1889.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is like, especially since that storyline is covered by one of the biggest writers/artists of
Neil Adams.
Of that time, which was Neil Adams. And Neil has
maybe he found some, you know, contractual way to remove those from the surface of the earth, because Dave, they're not like
very they're not politically correct.
Yes, they're not appalling. It's just funny. Yes. I know the story takes place in the 60s, but I'm willing to go out on a limb here, Dave, that and say that I don't think the streets of Mexico in the 1960s had Mexicans walking around in sombreros and carrying a bottle of tequila. He made his version of Mexico look like the Old West.
Not only that, it felt like a Speedy Gonzalez cartoon.
Yeah.
Especially with them in sombreros.
And the only people that dressed nice was the white guy, Boston Brand's twin brother.
Yes.
It was very just stereotypical, I guess, is the best way of saying it. There was all kinds of craziness, you know, immigration politics going on in those final issues as well that just felt kind of strange. But honestly, that's one of the reasons why I really dig these old stories. It is the charming aspect of these old pulpy comics.
Yeah.
There's no fucks given. It's like, hey, this is grimy material to begin with. Deal with it.
That's the reason why a generation, honestly.
Yeah, it really is. But that's the reason why I'm drawn to these old comics, because it's interesting to see how far we've come. So sure, it's schlocky, as I said at the top of the show, and dated, borderline offensive at times, but that was the time. Boston Brand is also a bit over the top macho, perhaps even a tad bit misogynistic, maybe.
Tad.
Well, I don't know if that would be the word, misogynistic. Typically, that word implies like some type of anger or aggression toward women. And Boston Brand is definitely not that. So maybe a womanizer? Would that be a better way to define him?
Yes, especially in his origin story.
Okay, because I know even in the Justice League Dark series, he was a bit of a womanizer. He was all about like Zatanna. He was trying to possess that dude to have sex with his girlfriend. Yep. Yeah, so maybe a womanizer, arrogant, conceited, cocky. He's a macho man.
He's a macho man.
He calls girls dolls and sweethearts.
And dame.
Yeah. So the writing reflects the times. The women throw themselves at him every second, and they are just happy to bask in his glory.
Yeah. And that's why it makes it even better.
It's a nerd's dream.
Yeah. And it makes it even better with his character, because that type of character has to deal with the fact that he has no body.
Yeah.
He has to jump into other people to actually do something.
And he does, I believe, doesn't he close the deal with a couple ladies and another person's body? And
yes.
I remember.
It's the funniest thing. All the Dead Man stories, dude, I always cracked up because I'm like, essentially, the comic book character is saying, you know what? I'm dead. I could do whatever I want. I'll just take over this person and have sex with his wife.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And I bring this up because I was trying to figure out if I even wanted to get into that part, but I feel like we needed to, just because it's such a big part of these opening issues, his origin story, that I'd feel like we were purposely trying to not talk about it. But I bring it up also because I read a lot of reviews on this comic, on this volume, volume one, and people were so baffled with some of the content. You idiots. This was written in the 60s, long before folks 60s. With delicate sensibilities had Twitter to express their outrage. Yes. Calm down. Calm down. This was written in the 60s, you know, and there are people saying, oh, talk about exposition overload. I'm like, well, that was the style of comic book writing back then.
Is the point. Yeah.
And I'm sure some Marvel fanboys would weep and beat themselves if they only knew of some of Stan Lee's so-called progressive stories. I mean, just look up some of Black Panther's origin stories and
Luke
look
Cage.
Into one of his affiliations and supergroups he was a part of. It's very enlightening, eye-opening. It's just the times. That's all it was.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, what really makes this character, you know, go from unredeemable, like, as you said, in the moral aspect, Dead Man should not be a moral person. But the thing is, they always throw there that down deep inside, Boston is a good guy. He looks out for people's best interest. He looks out for not just himself.
He has a good heart, but he struggles.
He's the quote unquote, you know, bad guy with a good heart.
Yeah,
he's the gangster with a good heart.
He definitely struggles, because I feel like that's the point of this origin story. If you we're going to get into it. I don't want to spoil that because I feel like the way I plan the discussion will slowly bleed into that. But when you dig in deeper into this series, you realize that it's not as superficial as many may think it is. The entire reason why he comes to life or is brought back to life is, in my opinion, it isn't for so he can get revenge. It's something far different.
Yes.
And we'll get into that. So let's talk about Dead Man Book One officially. The script was written by Arnold Drake with art by the fabulous Neil Adams. Fuck, dude, he's good.
Yes.
The synopsis. Before his groundbreaking runs on Batman and Green Lantern, Green Arrow, legendary comic artist Neil Adams first made his mark in superhero comics with Dead Man, star of the DC comic series Strange Adventures, inspired by the hit TV series The Fugitive, which I had no idea it was. Did yeah. you?
I didn't know about it till I actually read more about Dead Man when I got into him.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's based on this TV show. I watched the TV show and then later on the Harrison Ford movie.
Yeah. I like, had yeah, no idea.
Yeah. Boston no Brand is The Fugitive.
Yeah. So the Dead Man stories star costumed high wire performer Boston Brand, who is assassinated by an unknown marksman in his first story. A mysterious deity called Rama Krishna gives Boston Brand the chance to revisit the land of the living as Dead Man with the mission of finding his murderer.
Yeah, and get this. The murderer, just to actually even...
No spoilers.
To connect it to the fugitive. You know, everyone knows the fugitive, the one-armed man.
Oh, yeah.
His yeah. killer is a one-hand yeah. man with a hook.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, they just made it a little different.
Yeah. So Dead Man features spectacular bravura artwork by Neil Adams, then leading the field with an amazing hyper-realistic style and trompe l'oeil. Is that how you say that? Unlike anything seen in comics before or since. And we're going to get into Neil Adams' artwork style towards the end of the show because I feel like that's a big, big part of the reason why Dead Man has stood the test of time. Yes, his story is interesting, but also I feel like because it had such a solid foundation with Neil Adams, like eye-popping artwork, it's always been something that people are drawn to because it's pretty unique, especially in the 60s. Really good.
It's psychedelic. It's very psychedelic.
Yes, for sure. Now, in order to really enjoy the story, you gotta keep reminding yourself of the time.
Yes.
Try to remember how you felt as a child. The mysteries of the world were all so new. The fantastical was truly awe-inspiring. And that's why I enjoyed this. Despite its dated qualities, it still had a sense of wonderment to the story. Even with how many stories I've read, you know, I am now 39 years old. I have read tons of comic book stories. And it feels like a lot of them are regurgitated and you've been there, done that. But even someone like me who has read so many comics, as I crack open volume one, I am still swept up in the fantastical of this story. Despite the fact that it's very simple, there is a sense of wonderment that, you know, Drake and Neil Adams were able to put together in this comic that really does bring you in. The Rama Krishna aspect, the inclusion of folklore and the greater beyond lends itself to, you know, curiosity, as we all have, about the universe, you know, the wonderment of the universe. But when you dig deeper beneath that superficial story, the superficial qualities of these issues, Arnold Drake was playing within a much bigger sandbox of thought and expression. And I think there's a lot of people that this was lost on.
Yeah, because it is a very unique concept. During that time, especially when you take it into the grand scheme of things of the Silver Age of comics, you're talking about a time when Superman and Jimmy Olsen and you had Superboy flying around with Krypton.
Oh,
you
had
Batman doing joke gags on Scooby-Doo. And you had all that. And then all of a sudden you have this really unique character pop up alongside characters like the Spectre.
Right.
Phantom Stranger, suddenly Dead Man pops up. Swamp Thing starts making his appearance.
Constantine
would actually follow those people, yeah. follow those characters. But those characters started as kind of like, oh, they're a niche. They're for the niche audience of comic books
yeah.
who want kind of like that pulpy feel, that horror aspect. I always remember getting these the comics when I was a kid and seeing some of my brother's older comics, because he was big into the Spectre. Mm-hmm. And some of those comics were just freaking scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like the imagery in those were just stuff that you would not see like later until like the 90s and the 80s.
Yeah. And that, with the Comics Code, it kind of prevented a lot of over the top things, but they found workarounds, you know, creatively to make sure they can still convey the aspect of horror.
And that's the thing.
The oddness.
That's what I appreciate about these comics. Even when I look back at them today, is like, just like what you said, that word creatively, it's not like a jump scare or a using gore for gore's sake. No, they want to actually put a unique image out there that might disturb you, but it won't gross you out.
Yeah.
It'll build you with a sense of tension.
Whenever you're dealing with the fantastical, right?
Yeah.
No different than Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone wasn't truly scary.
No.
But it was the world they built. It was the atmosphere that made you uncomfortable and made your skin crawl. And the genius of Twilight Zone, which again was lost on so many people at the time. I mean, most of Twilight Zone was designed as a form to say something socially.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Twilight Zone has also stood the test of time, because it was saying something. There was something deeper within the superficial surface, and or I should say within the superficial aspects of the story, there was something much deeper below the surface. And that's what I found. I found that to be the same case with Volume 1 of Dead Man.
Mm-hmm.
There are similarities to Dante's Inferno. The allegory that represents the journey of the soul towards God, with the Inferno describing, you know, the recognition and rejection of sin. The entire setup of his origin story is designed to serve as a lesson. He was murdered in the middle of a circus act by a faceless enemy that he cannot find. The notion that he is unable to figure out who murdered him says a lot about Boston. Has he really treated so many people poorly throughout his life that he's unable to put together a suspect list?
Exactly.
And how many years does this go on for this character? And this is where Ramakrishna factors in when it comes to this allegory that represents Boston's journey to his final resting place. When that will be and where is up to Boston Brand. And at first you assume that Rama bringing back Boston from the dead was a good thing. He has a chance to find his murderer and make him pay. But it's more than that. Rama brought Boston back to punish him. That's my interpretation. It's never stated in these issues. And I know through time, things change and they're more clear. But within this immediate storyline, it's heavily implied. Boston states in the issues, "Am I destined to live forever and watch as the world moves on without me? Is this my punishment?" And I am paraphrasing. He's unable to truly interact as himself with the world. He has to possess others to communicate. He can't touch or feel. How is this a good thing? This is an awful thing.
It's an awful thing.
He has to live in limbo, essentially, until he finds his murderer. So when you take a deeper look at the setup, you begin to realize that this is not necessarily a story of redemption and revenge, but a story of comeuppance. And yes, as I said, his story changes drastically throughout the years. But in these opening pages, that is definitely the message. The faceless murderer that he's unable to find is actually a very clever way to convey just how disconnected and arrogant Boston Brand was when he was alive. People were not important to him. He was focused on just himself. The spotlight was on him and he loved it. He did have his saving grace. He cared about people. But it didn't really seem to come through until after he had died.
Yes.
Then suddenly he begins to appreciate the people that were in his life. The simple people, like the circus owner and the big dumb guy that helps with the circus. These are people that he kind of shrugged off and treated like shit. And now suddenly he wants to protect them and he cares about them because he always had a good heart. But it took a tragedy for him to find it and to realize what actually matters.
It's that hearkening back to, as cheesy as it sounds, it's that hearkening back to Scrooge.
Mm-hmm.
Ebenezer Scrooge, who sees everybody.
Oh, I thought you meant Scrooge McDuck with his number one dime. I thought that's one dime.
But like Charles Dickens, that type of storytelling where basically mm-hmm. the hero is honestly could honestly be classified as a villain, where you feel this is his comeuppance, this is what he deserves. But at the end of the story, you feel sympathy for him, because just like what you said, Boston didn't choose this. He was chosen. He was chosen by this great entity that is way above him. And the price is he's never able to truly interact again with the real world, with the material world, which his whole being beforehand was just tailored for. He's an entertainer. He's a circus. One of those circus acts that basically just is driven by the need of attention and fan base. And suddenly he's told, okay, we're going to give you this power, but you're never going to get like the true, you know, hey, you know who did this? Boston Brand. Hey, you know who did this? Dead Man. No, he's never going to get that, because people will never know that he's inside that person's body.
Yeah.
It's like, my favorite, most recent interaction of Dead Man was Blackest Night, where
dude, that was good.
Where he has to help Batman, Robin, Red Robin to fend off the zombies, right? And Batman, being Batman, just looks at Boston Brand and uses him as a tool and says, here's what I want you to do. You go do it, because no one else is going to do this. And Boston is like going, but I don't want to do this. This is something that, well, I got to do it. And at the very end, no, it's all Jason Blood. Hey, thanks, Jason Blood, for helping us out and bringing out Etrigan. No, that was Boston. and Boston is like a little ticked off by it, because like everyone's happy that, you know, Jason Blood helped. But Boston has nothing. No one says anything about Dead Man, not even Batman.
Yeah. I mean, dude, it's a pretty unique concept. I know it sounds silly saying that, because you're dealing with a ghost, and we've been there, done that. There's been tons of stories where you have a revenging spirit or an avenging spirit of sorts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's nothing new, but it's how you take that concept and how you flesh it out. Mm-hmm. That's what matters. And there's a reason why Boston Brand has been around since the 60s and has never gone away for more than he's been around for, I don't think he's been away for more than a couple years.
No, because Deadman is kind of seen as kind of like that ultimate weapon of DC.
Yeah.
Where if you have a crisis situation, the thing I've always noticed about DC, they have their tier of superheroes, right? And everyone says, oh, the Trinity is the top tier of power. No. Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman, yeah, are important. They're the faces of the league. But in true power levels, there are heroes above them that in major crisis, even the Trinity will turn around and say, I need to find him. I need to find, you know, the Spectre. I need to find Deadman. If you look at every single crisis book that they've ever done, they've always called on this on one or two characters that are super important, and Deadman has been at least in two of those major crises.
Yeah, they always managed to find the right spot for his story and for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he did have a run as well in Justice League Dark in 2001 when that series launched with DC's the New 52, and they brought him into the core player group, right?
Kind of,
because he already was, wasn't he?
He kind of already was, especially if you take into concept that when you think of the magical side of DC,
mm-hmm.
Deadman's there because of the deity that summoned him.
The New 52 was confusing and what they were trying to do. I mean,
you could do a whole week's worth of episodes just trying to explain the magic side of DC.
Yeah. So he's been a part of various groups, the New 52's Justice League Dark, Seven Soldiers of Victory, the Sentinels of Magic. His abilities are quite simple: peak human level, athlete, acrobat, invisibility, fight, and intangibility and possesses any sentient being. And these are all things that we see in volume one of his story. Let's get into the art, Dave. Okay. Neil Adams, his art is truly mesmerizing. I love it.
Yeah.
It's a bit dated, but that's okay, because I think it fits with the entire style that he was working with. The cover work he did for Dead Man Collection in 2001 is really great. In fact, I'm currently on the market for a blown up version of that. So if anybody out there knows where I can find it, I will post the photo to our Twitters. And if you can find it, there might be something special in it for you.
Well, one of my
finder's fee, Dave.
I'll be honest. In all my days of collecting comics and comic art, one of my favorite prints I ever got was a personalized Neil Adams sketch of Superman. And Neil has a way of actually making his main characters look bigger and epic than they should be. Like, if you look how he draws Batman and Superman, they are seen almost mythical.
Well, dude, like, that goes right with his style, Dave.
It goes with his style.
Because they mentioned that his style, and I didn't know this about Neil Adams until I read, you know, Dead Man, and I had to do some research. Yes, I was very aware of Neil Adams' work within the comic field, but I didn't know about his specific style. And it's called the bravura artwork. That's what they call it. So the fact that these characters are larger than life, I mean, it almost feels like his style fits within the comic field when you're dealing with these superheroes.
Yeah, because like these heroes are, it's one of those things I think led to the fact that there is a difference between how people view Marvel and how people view DC. Because of Neil Adams, a lot of artists started following Adams' lead in DC. And their heroes and villains started seeing almost kind of like godlike. They're almost too amazing to believe to be real, you know, like they're mythical. While in Marvel, you had Kirby and Lee and all of them, and they wanted to make their heroes more believable, more relatable to the person down on the street. And it's funny because you can actually look at Adams's resume. He jumped during a time and went to Marvel, but the team he covered was the X-Men. And when you look at his run at the X-Men, suddenly that's when you start seeing like the X-Men started looking like, oh, they're more about of an ideal. It's not about like, you know, a social justice. It's more like these characters are so fantastical.
Yeah.
Now. And if you look at a lot of his artwork that was done in X-Men, some of those really do make like the heroes like Cyclops, Magneto look godlike.
Yeah, he's an artist. Like a lot of people dig him, even people within the industry. He is most known for his definitive modern imagery of the DC Comics characters, Batman and Green Arrow. And he's also the co-founder of a graphic design studio, Continuity Associates, and as a creators' rights advocate who helped secure a pension and recognition for Superman creators Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. So he's also a bit of an activist when it comes to his industry, which is, you know, mad respect to a man like that who doesn't forget about the people that may not be as lucky as him. So Neil Adams has had a lot of good work throughout the years. He's done great. He has had a fantastic career. But now Arnold Drake, the actual writer, who doesn't get a lot of credit, Arnold Drake doesn't seem to get as much recognition as Neil Adams when it comes to the work behind these issues. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Neil Adams is still alive and he has done a lot of work behind the scenes. But even when you read up on the synopsis online within the DC databases, Neil Adams is given the recognition for Dead Man Volume 1, Strange Adventures number 205 through 213. And Arnold Drake isn't even mentioned.
Yeah.
If you look at Comixology, Neil Adams and his work on Dead Man, I'm like, wait, it's Arnold Drake. He's the creator. Arnold Drake is the actual creator
Yes, he is.
Of Dead Man. Now, this is a guy that also has done some fantastic work, but does not get the credit.
Get the credit, because a lot of people might not know this. If it wasn't for Arnold Drake, we wouldn't have Doom Patrol, and we wouldn't have Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. He definitely, when you look at those three titles, Deadman, Doom Patrol, Guardians of the Galaxy, he definitely had a knack for the zany and bizarre.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, and that's the thing is, like, with writers, it's different in comic books. The artist is always seen as the face of that character because they're the ones drawing it. But no one really puts into perspective that the writer is also the one that creates the soul of that character. You know, the reason why Deadman is the way he is because Arnold Drake gave him those traits. Neil helped out with that by giving his traits actual physical appearance, actually putting it to page. Yeah, and that's really cool. But without Arnold Drake, we wouldn't have Boston Brand as he is. It'd be totally different. It's very much like if you look at a Neil Adams Batman book, it's very different how he views Batman than another writer, like, say, Frank Miller.
Right.
It's very different. And but his imagery is still the same. But artists get most of the credit. It's one of those things that I wish people would actually keep track of like, hey, the actual characters like Len Wein and Arnold Drake and Jack Kirby to some degree would get more praise in the mass audiences. But that's how the industry runs.
Yeah. Dude, he's done a lot of work, and apparently he's done work that to this day doesn't necessarily get credit for.
Yes.
Comic books during this time period did not routinely list creator credits. However, historians have pinpointed some of Drake's first DC work as the first seven pages of the 8-page Batman story, The Return of Mr. Future, in Batman 98, which was March 1956. And then Drake was started scripting across a variety of genres for DC, from adventure drama, Fireman Farrell, and Showcase Number 1 back in 1956. He also did a supernatural fiction, the anthology series, House of Mystery.
Yep.
So this man has done a lot of work, and it's cool stuff, too. It's very pulpy. It's very bizarre. It's the weirdo stuff that we're all drawn to.
Oh, yeah. And you would be surprised to see some of his later work that a lot of people say that really, even outside of comics, he's had an effect on. I mean, there is – it's not proven, but a lot of people in the industry do say that he wrote for the first Gold Key Star Trek stuff.
Oh, really?
And that was stuff that was way out there. But a lot of people basically say, yeah, Arnold Drake broke out of the industry in comics. And, you know, when he tackled stuff like the Star Trek Gold Key, like there was other things. He did like Bob Hope. He did Bob Hope comics, if I'm not correct. And the fact of the matter is he's not talked about as one of the greats is almost so surreal sometimes, but it fits almost kind of like the titles that he covers, because all the titles are classics. Don't get me wrong. Doom Patrol, Deadman, he's covered X-Men. But if you look at all the stuff that he's covered, Guardians of the Galaxy, they're only sung about now by today's standards. Back then, they were probably like not even C-level characters. They were probably D-level characters. Like, you would never see Deadman with Superman in a Superman book. And that was that by far shows how Arnold Drake as a creator, even though he was given these reins of actually having to deal with characters that are D level, he made them special and almost timeless now, because now if it wasn't for Arnold Drake, you would not have a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
I'm hoping someday we can move Dead Man more to the mainstream when it comes to the film side or TV side.
I really do.
I know he's had such bad luck. This character, this comic book license has had such bad luck when it comes to the live action side. In 2011, Dave, Warner Brothers, and you may not know this because I also found this out just earlier this week, and I'm ashamed of myself for not knowing this, but in 2011, Warner Brothers hired Supernatural creator Eric Kripke to helm a Dead Man television series for the CW.
Are you serious? Do you realize how badass that would have been?
Dude, this could have been the thing that really launched DC superheroes, because shortly after they moved on to Arrow.
Yes.
So Kripke was supposed to be the dude to launch the DC era on the CW. And dude, Kripke is an amazing television writer. People may not know all of his work, but Supernatural, the first five seasons are easily some of the best television. Seasons 6 through 11 are pretty damn good. And now it's moving into its 15th and final season just now. Eric Kripke did leave after the first five seasons, but now he's on another show that is lighting the world on fire called The Boys.
Oh,
and The
yeah.
Boys is amazing. So if you look at what he has done and all that he's accomplished, Kripke definitely could have done a really good Dead Man TV show.
Oh, absolutely. And especially since during that time frame, when you think about it. Now, this is a hypothetical I'm throwing out there, but I think it's a cool hypothetical. If Kripke was supposed to do a Dead Man Supernatural type of show for DC on CW, and during that time, instead, he creates Supernatural. Jensen Ackles as Boston Brand.
Oh, wow.
Would have been perfect.
You know what? You're right.
Would have been perfect.
It would have worked.
Okay. I'm sorry. I look at Dean Winchester. I'm like going, holy crap. Now you're Boston Brand.
David, yeah. It gets worse. Okay. It gets worse. You ready? So Guillermo del Toro was rumored to have been working on a couple projects for Warner Brothers. There was a Justice League Dark film allegedly in the works.
Yeah, everyone knows that one.
Okay, but apparently he was also interested in producing a film on Dead Man specifically.
Do you think it's just because I think the concept scares away production houses, like studios? When you think about the concept, okay, your hero is a ghost.
And he's not necessarily a great individual.
And he's not a very nice individual, but we're supposed to like him.
Dave, if the audiences were like us, it would be an easy sell. But I feel like selling a ghost concept, it's... Do you remember The Shadow?
Yes.
Okay, that movie was great. But it didn't do well with audiences.
Yes,
because they couldn't understand
it. They couldn't understand it. It's too much of a really out there concept. It's why, you know, the Dick Tracy film.
Yeah.
Classic. But it didn't do well because no one really understood that type of storytelling.
It's also why people don't understand bronies, because it's hard to understand why dudes, grown men, are like My Little Ponies. Pony. But it's a thing, bro. And there goes any brony fans.
But honestly,
don't let the door hit your weird ass on the way out.
Honestly, I really do, especially with creators like Kripke and Del Toro, I think they could have done it. But I think like studios basically got too afraid of the concept.
Guess who was supposed to direct the Dead Man movie?
Who?
The dude that directed the two towers, the Dark Towers movie, which was awful. So maybe it was a good.
Maybe that's not a good thing.
Maybe it's a good thing that it got canceled.
Maybe it's a good thing.
Because he did a horrible job with a piece of fantastic source, with a fantastic piece of source material.
I'd almost say, like, why wouldn't Del Toro actually direct it? Del Toro should direct it.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to a very quick break, and then when we get back, we'll get into our final thoughts.
Who the hell do you think I am? Benedict bloody Cumberbatch.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
The
least entertaining, you know, like
a black guy being pulled. This is a black guy tied by rope.
Yes.
Led by a horse and a white man on that horse with a cowboy hat.
I think it would
it's not been, entertaining.
No, I think it would have been less
we are making it entertaining.
It would have been less offensive if the black individual was on a horse and riding side by side.
You can say so, man, like, that's not the problem.
No, you know, like they'll be riding side by side like Lone Ranger
black
and Tonto.
Individual.
You want him to be a black Tonto.
No, no,
he just
side by side. The Lone Ranger.
Side by side with the guy. You know, side by side. Equal.
This
you know,
is.
Arm in arm. You know, like brothers.
Oh, my God.
This, Thomas, perfect example of a racist because he thinks he's fixing it.
Yes.
No, no, it's okay.
By making him. Like, listen, no, let's make it better. We'll put him on a horse and he'll be a sidekick to a white man. Still not equal.
Can I hear you? For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it, no free stuff. That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
Okay, so Entertainment Earth, DC superhero John Constantine's Best of Figure with Collector Magazine number 35 is on sale through Entertainment Earth. The best figurines from the DC superhero collection are being relaunched in metallic polyresin with updated packaging, improved figurine bases, and updated magazines. The collection features a 1 to 21 scale figurines of DC Comics' greatest heroes and villains. Don't miss the DC superhero John Constantine number 35 Best of Collector figure. Look for the links for Entertainment Earth in our podcast descriptions and click through to Entertainment Earth. Welcome back, everybody, to the House of Mystery, the John Constantine and Friends podcast. We have a few more minutes, Dave, left in the show, and I want to get into our final thoughts. We covered a lot. I feel like we did a good job really pulling out the importance of the issue, of the issues in this first volume here. And I'm hoping people will go and back and read these issues. Yes, they are a very superficial read, as I said, but I feel like if they are patient and they look at these issues through new lenses, through new glasses, they will realize that there is some stuff there, Dave. But go ahead and give me your final thoughts.
My final thoughts on this. This is definitely a piece of comic book history and a character that I think a lot of comic book fans should know about. And if you call yourself a comic book fan, you should go back and read some of these characters, because some of these characters are now coming back into mainstream audiences. We're seeing it with the shows on DC, DC Universe with Swamp Thing and Doom Patrol and Titans. And even on the DC on CW, you're seeing a little nods to characters that are not the mainstream. They were almost like niche heroes and villains back in the 70s and 80s, like Constantine. So if any of our listeners out there are comic book fans and they want to know more about comics, pick up this Dead Man Run. You will be surprised with it. It is dated, but you have to understand that it's also a really cool look back at
how a generation was. It's like the 1960s type of writing. And now we have, now you could contrast it with the writing of today, and you could say, man, how far have we come? Or some people say, man, how far have we regressed? Because we don't write about stuff like this anymore because people are too afraid to. And even like the look back at the art, for any artists out there, you got to look back at the Dead Man run of Neil Adams, because he was a master at the psychedelic art. I can't say the type of art. What was it? Bravura. That type of art is just everywhere in pop culture. If you're an artist, you got to look back and study that and actually kind of take cues from Neil Adams' type of artwork, because it's a very popular artwork and it's coming back in
art style. Yeah.
In today's world right now. So I honestly feel that this is worth a pickup. It's a fun treasure hunt to find, because just like what you said, it's hard to find.
Yeah. And I mean, I really wanted a physical copy because this is the type of thing I'd like to have in my collection. But I ended up having to read just the digital version on the DC Universe app. I didn't want to spend $11 on the digital version, just because I would have. But if I got it free through the DC Universe app, I mean, shit, that thing's $6 a month. You watch all the TV shows you want and read all the comic books you want.
Oh, yeah. It's worth it.
All right. Yeah, my final thoughts are very similar to yours. As usual, Dave, you and I are on the same page. It's a good read. It's an easy read. It's fun. You know, kick back, put your feet up, maybe drink a little bit of wine or a brew, and enjoy the read for what it is. But also keep your eyes open for just the little things there. The reasons behind his origins, why he was brought back. Pay attention to the fortune teller in the story that actually drops little nuggets on you as to why he was brought back. There's a lot of cool little things, but you just have to keep your eyes open. I love the comic book style from the 60s. Yes, it's dated, but I just love how they put everything in your face. Everything feels up front, and then that leaves room in the back spaces of the panel to drop little pieces of breadcrumbs to help solve the mystery. It's a fun series to read. Definitely check it out if you're a House of Mystery fan. If you love everything John Constantine and friends, I think it's definitely worth a read. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you miss any part of this broadcast, you can always find us on Stitcher and iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Just search House of Mystery. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And good night.
My name is John Constantine. I'm the one who steps from the shadows, all trench coat and arrogant. I'll drive your demons away, kick them in the bollocks, and spit on them when they're down, leaving only a nod and a wink and a wisecrack. I walk my path alone, because let's be honest, who'd be crazy enough to walk it with me?